tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'm airing interviews with two of the major players at Florida Studio Theater Improv, the artistic director, Will Luera, and the accompanist, Hunter Brown. In many ways, these men represent very, very different ways of finding their way to what they are doing now. Each of them is interesting, and the combination is more interesting still. Hang on, here come the show.
Hearing from an inner voice, finding choice where there's no choice, with gentle prodding from the voice, oh, you really can. Deeper, deeper down you dive, where the child's gone to survive.
Welcome to The Lynn Show. The Lynn Show is about being who you really are. Not who you think you should be, or who someone else told you you should be, or who other people are, but who you really are. As a therapist, it's clear to me that many of us are acting in ways that don't reflect who we really are. And if you want to know more about that, you can find me at my website, thelynnshow.com, thelynnshow, don't leave the E out of Lynn, thelynnshow.com. In my shows, I interview people who make their living or their life with an art. I do that because when you listen to them, you can hear what it sounds like to be who you really are. Today, I'm airing two interviews. The first with Will Luera, who is the current artistic director for the Florida Studio Theater Improv Department. Will's story is really interesting because he spent most of his life making his living as something very different than an improv actor. But improv actor is what he is, and he is finally now able to spend his time, his energy, his passion, his love doing what he should always have been doing. So I'm going to play Will's interview, and then I'm going to follow with an interview with Hunter Brown, who is the accompanist for the troupe. But first, here, Will Luera. Okay, so I'm here with Will Luera at Florida Studio Theater. Mm-hmm. And Will is the, what's your title?
Director of Improvisation.
And Will is Director of Improvisation for Florida Studio Theater, which is a pretty big deal because improvisation is very important to Florida Studio Theater.
Mm-hmm.
Good. Okay. So I interview people who make their living or their life with an art.
Okay.
And I'm going to guess that the art with which you are making your living is the art of improvisation.
That's correct.
Yes. So I only ask one question, and that is, you remember the very first moment in your life when performing, acting out, being looked at, making up stuff attracted you, called you, seemed interesting to you?
I remember various times when I was younger where performance was interesting, but I didn't think of it as a career or even as a hobby. I just
When you say when I was younger.
Yes. So the very first memory.
Yeah.
I remember it was like third grade, and we would have like these talent shows, and revolving around. I went to a Catholic school, so it was a talent show either that had to do with the Stations of the Cross or presenting the flag or something like that. And there was one that we did was it had to do with presenting the flag and a little march on stage. And I remember really enjoying that and enjoying the precise direction that we were given and the focus on what the audience was seeing, et cetera. And I remember getting really responding to that, but not really seeking it out after that. I was a science guy more than anything, all the way through college even. When I got the bug again.
Wait. I'm sure. Really curious. I'm curious because it sounds like this a third grade experience was powerful for you, right? Because you remember it even still,
right?
But there were no other experiences that were related to performing. You weren't in the school plays. None of that, right?
None of that. No. I mean, I was all about. I loved science fairs, and I remember being very particular about my science fair project. So if there was anything theatrical. I'm surprised I didn't go more towards set design and lighting design and stuff like that, because I really enjoyed the presentation of my science projects and making sure that, and the lighting and the way everything looked and the way I staged everything was so important to me. But nothing related to performance.
No, but what's so interesting to me about this is you made a point of saying that one of the things you really liked about that third grade thing was the direction and how specific it was.
Right.
Now you're saying that you have this interest in detail and specific design. Everything has to be where it's supposed to be, right?
Yes.
And you're in improv, which is the opposite of
right.
There are no rules, there are no designs, there's nothing, right?
That's right.
I think that's absolutely fascinating. So now tell me if you can, I'm sure you can, where it started, where this shift in I'm going to be something to do with science.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what did you think you were going to be?
I thought I was going to be, I majored in physics and computer science.
So
I thought that I would be working in most likely software design. And up until recently, I was either part-time or half-time or full-time even, up until a few months ago, in fact.
Oh, my God.
I was still doing it. And it was mostly because I enjoyed it. I mean, not only was it a good salary, but I really enjoyed working in that field. Now, it didn't really, performance didn't come back into my life until high school, where I was part of the council, one of the officers of the Latino Club, and every year we had an open house at our high school, so we had to present culture, and everybody got selected to do, you know, either present, to do tours of the school, and I would volunteer to do the dancing. I would learn a dance, and then I would present it every hour on the hour throughout the open house, and I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed learning it, and then performing, and...
Well, wait.
Yep.
So, had you been a dancer before?
I mean, no. I was not. I was not a dancer.
So do you know what made you want to do the dance?
That's the thing. I don't. I don't know what drew me to it. And it wasn't like a call for attention or anything like that. I wasn't seeking that.
No, you like the precision.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I saw it. I think the opportunity to learn something and something new, something that took me out of my comfort zone, and then to be able to present that back is something that cycle and that relationship with an audience is what I enjoyed. And I did it various times, and it wasn't until my senior year in high school that I did my first play. And
really?
Yes, and that was, it was, and I was a chorus member in a production of The Wiz that we did, and I was just lost in the chorus, and I enjoyed every bit of it. And
did you audition?
I auditioned for that, and it was, I went to a high school where pretty much if you were a senior, you would get in, and this was definitely the production where all the seniors came out, like, and all the, anyways, extroverted seniors came out, and so you would have, like, the popular track guy as the Tin Man, right, et cetera. And so we would, I had a lot of fun. And
so were you part of that crowd? I mean, was there a theater crowd, or there was.
And
you weren't, because you were in the science
I was
thing.
I was in bridge building competitions and history fairs and an officer in the Latino club. I was in the Asian club. I was in all these other things, but not. But I was a part of the drama club.
So, do you remember why you auditioned, or is it the same thing as with the dance, that this is something else I can learn, or something else I can do, or
little bit of that. It was also, I started to, although I wasn't a part of that circle, some of the friends I made over my first 3 years were involved in theater, and it was something that I was like, okay, this seems interesting, and I would go see them in their shows, and I remember a production of Godspell in particular that I thought really moved me, not in its content, but just in its production. I was like, wow, this is really neat, mm-hmm. like all this music and dancing, and it's great, and so that piqued my interest, but I really didn't get the courage to audition until my senior year. But I was curious about it.
Yeah.
I was curious about
it. Okay, fine. So we have you. So you're a senior in high school.
Yep.
You're going to go to college and study physics and computer science, right?
That's correct.
And, okay, so what happened?
What happened? So once I got to college, I went to Boston College. And, again, physics and computer science, double major. And I started to seek out that extracurricular that I think many college kids do. And for the first part of, for most of my freshman year, I was on the crew team. So I was either rowing or as a coxswain. And that was my extracurricular activity. And then it wasn't, but I again, had this interest in theater. And every time I went down to the theater department to see what was auditioning, I would see the requirements, and you know, you need to know at least 2 monologues, or you need to be able to do this, sing 16 bars of this, and I just wasn't prepared for that, and I didn't even know where to begin to prepare myself for that.
Right.
But then I saw one notice that said no preparation necessary. And I said, okay, all right, well, that seems interesting. That seems doable. So then I go to that audition.
Mm-hmm.
And it was scripted, partially scripted. And at the audition, they just had a list of about a dozen different characters. And they said, why don't you look at this list and pick 2 that you like, and you're going to come in, and then you're going to improvise in that character, okay? I had no idea what improv meant, and they were so. And even though I grew up in Chicago, the mecca of improvisation, I grew up on the South Side, which is far away from all the improv theaters, and so I didn't know what it was. They explained it to me a little bit, and so I chose 2 characters. I'll never forget. I chose the sheriff because it was this Western-themed show, and then I also chose, and I think this is what helped me ultimately, is that there was a Mexican character. And so I was like, oh, okay. Well, here's a character that I could lock into pretty quickly, right? I've been spending 4 years as an officer in the Latin Club, so and growing up as a Mexican American kid. And so I was able to tap into that character pretty quickly, and I got the part. And then that's when it started.
So what was it?
What was the play or the show?
Yeah.
It was an improvised murder mystery. So it was.
So did you actually continue to improv? I mean, it was improv on stage also. It wasn't scripted.
Right. So it was like some scenes were scripted. So you were always on.
Yeah.
It was the way it was performed. We would perform it in a house with about 12 different rooms. And it was actually a very unique concept, and it was before interactive theater became big. That's what this was. It was interactive theater. We had every room had its own timeline with different scenes happening, and if you weren't in a scene, you were in character, interacting with the audience.
Oh, my.
And so we had to pretend that we were in a saloon, and if we weren't performing, we were out mingling and improvising with other characters.
But in character.
But in character, right.
Yeah, and you liked it.
And I loved it, yeah. And I loved it, and I mean, so much so that the very next year I was made vice president, and then by my junior year...
Vice president of?
Of the club, of the improv murder mystery club.
So that was
club.
What it was. Oh, it was an improv murder mystery club.
Right, yeah.
Oh, my God.
And they're still around to this day, and so it's fun to go see them. And then by my junior year, which was a little, I think, unconventional for a lot of those clubs, I was the president of the club my junior year. I usually was a senior, but I was so passionate about it that I was president by my senior year, by my junior year, and then my senior year I actually got to direct the show. But that fueled that improv, the interest in improv. But the great thing, the interesting side effect is that because of that, I got the courage to start to audition for plays. And so the very next year, my sophomore year, I was in 12 Angry Men, I was in the musical Evita, and then after that I was getting scripted shows along with my improv shows.
Wow.
Right.
So now do you sing?
I sing enough. Yeah. I think with some training I would do a lot. I've never been formally trained. But enough to be in a chorus, like Evita.
Yes, right. Okay, so then this thing, mm-hmm. which you had never really thought about or considered, now becomes a huge passion mm-hmm. and a driving force.
Right.
Right? Okay, right. Good. So, are you thinking that this is a career path, or you're still not?
I'm still not thinking of it as a career path. The most that I did while I was in college was look into summer acting opportunities, like going down to Disney or going down to Universal, stuff like that. And that's about the extent of what I looked into. And it wasn't until I graduated that I knew that there was improv outside of college.
Ah, yeah. Yes, of course, you didn't know anything about it.
Yeah, I didn't know anything about it. And so, and again, even though I grew up in Chicago, when I would go home and visit my family, I knew that it wasn't as easy as just Googling it back then. I mean, you had to seek it out. And I knew that there was some stuff in Chicago that was improv.
Yeah, like Second City.
Like Second City, and it's amazing. It's like I live right. like in the same city, but it really is a contrast. You live on the South Side, it's all that's so far away. And I would be seeking it out, but never really, it was too far away from me, distance-wise, to get fully immersed in it. But I would seek out the shows, and then after graduation from Boston College, I was at an audition. I was now mostly into scripted theater, and I saw an audition a flyer for an improv class. I was like, oh, okay, this is interesting, and I signed up. And it was the first formal improv class that I had taken. In Boston, and that then opened up. It was she was an alum from Improv Boston, so she recommended for me to audition, and then I auditioned and I got into Improv Boston, and that's where I spent 17 years of my life.
Oh my goodness!
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So that became. So you're working as a whatever else you're working
right.
at, right?
Yep.
But then you're doing this with your heart.
Right.
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 Okay. So that goes on, 17 years, mm-hmm. this is on the side, sort of.
Right.
This is my hobby, this is my passion, this is my fun.
Sure.
But I'm making a living over here.
Right.
Right, okay. So here you are now.
Now I'm here. Yeah, so it took, over that time, it was 3 years of being a performer at Improv Boston. Then after about 3 years, I was about to turn 25, and the timeline I gave myself was at 25, I'm going to move to New York. Right, that was the sort of the self-imposed timeline.
Okay, is this you're going there as a computer person, or you're going there as an actor?
I was going to go there as a computer person that did improv on the side.
You were going to do the same thing. You were going to start the same life.
Exactly.
Okay, good. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right. And you
wanted to go to New York because
I liked it.
Okay, fine.
I like, and even to this day, like I really love New York.
Yeah.
And so I was. That's all I. That was my only real interest in it. And I had a lot of other improv and theater friends that were going to New York as well.
Yeah, I was going to say that's the path people go to if they're trying to make a living in the theater.
Right, right.
Okay, good.
I was just following friends, and I was planning on doing the same exact thing. And by that point, 3 years into my improv career, I was working my 40-hour week job and making maybe a couple $100 a month in improv, whether it's through gigs or teaching or whatever.
Not enough to live on.
Not enough to live on, not at all. But I mean, enough to like say that I was making some money. It was slightly above a hobby at this point.
Yeah, you can put it on your tax return.
Right. Exactly.
And take off the classes and everything. Right.
Right. Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
And so, right before, about 3 months before my 25th birthday, I had already been making some waves in the Boston improv scene, in that I was starting to introduce what's known as long-form improvisation. No one else was doing it, but I was kind of taking the initiative, and I was stepping outside of my theater to do it. They weren't interested in it, so I would produce my own stuff on the side. And the board of directors sort of saw what I was doing, and they said, you know what, we like what you're doing on your own. So we want you to...
The board of Improv Boston. Right.
And so they said, we like what you're doing on your own, and we want to do that here. So will you rejoin us full-time? Not full-time, but will
right,
you rejoin
right.
us instead of splitting your time, but as the artistic director?
And lead it, right. Oh, right. Yes.
Mm. And so then I was like, okay.
Now, is that a paid position?
No, that was not a paid position.
I see.
It was not a paid position for about... So that was in 2000. For about 10 or 11 years, it was not a paid position.
Oh, my
it was
goodness.
A paid volunteer position. And so it would the only benefit I was getting from it financially was that now that I had an institution to work with, there were more classes, more students. So I was getting a little bit more instructor money. But running an organization, you can't be teaching all the time.
No, you're right, absolutely right. Right.
And so, but by that point, now we're talking on top of a 14-hour week job, we're talking about a 20 to 30-hour commitment.
Yeah.
To help.
Yeah, it's
help
a good thing you're still young.
Right. And so that was pretty much the next 10 years of my life involved working through this organization and building it. And we had, over those 10 years, we moved from 4 shows a week, and most of which we canceled, to in a, what was it, like a 70-seat house. Over those 10 years, we moved to a new space. Now we had two stages in one space. We had a bar. We moved from 4 shows a week to about 20 shows a week.
You're making the organization money.
Oh, yeah. They made them tons of money.
Oh, my God.
And we grew and grew and grew. And by that point, and this was just a few years ago, now we're hiring full-time staff. But I was still, I was still telling the board, I'm like, we need to make sure that we have a managing director in place. We need to make sure we have all these other administrative people in place. And once they're in place, then the artistic director, you can hire the artistic director. Me, right? I just wanted to make sure that, because I knew that if I was the first full-time person, a lot of the work that I did not want to do was going to start to fall on me.
Oh, very smart. Yeah. And in the meanwhile, you're making money. You're
right.
Making a living.
We're making,
right?
I'm making a part, I mean, now it's...
No, aren't you? This is part-time
this
now.
This is part-time. I still have a full...
No, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
That's what I mean. You're making money. It's
right.
Not like you're starving.
Right, right.
Right. I got it.
Yeah, enough that so that at this point, I was married, I had a kid on the way, so my full-time job was supporting all that. At this point, my Improv Boston job is a little bit more now. We're now... one of the first managing directors I hired, put me on a monthly like $200 stipend, and then eventually that was booted up to $500. So I was getting some benefit out
right.
of it. Finally, around 2012, 2013, when it was time to hire an artistic director, essentially the board of the board and I decided to just go in different directions. And I stayed on board with the theater. I helped them hire a new artistic director. And I kind of just started to set my sights on bigger things. I felt like what I wanted to do with the organization was I got it to where I wanted it to be. And my sights at this point had evolved to beyond Boston. And I was starting to take on a more national, if not international, perspective on what I wanted to do with improvisation. And I knew that the theater wanted to focus more on local
mm-hmm.
Development. So I was like, okay, well, I totally support that, but I think I'm going to need to step away, still be a part of it. I mean, I'm still, to this day, the artistic director emeritus of the organization, but I wanted to focus on my own work.
Right.
And so from, like, 2012 until 2014, I was doing a lot of touring, a lot of improv in Europe and in South America.
On my own.
Well, I started up a couple of different spin-off improv organizations.
Got them work all over the place?
Yes, yeah.
And so, at this point, have you stopped working in the real world?
At that point, no.
You're still working in the real world.
Not right now.
No, then,
yes,
right?
Yes. But I was able to. I mean, my now, I feel like my tech career was becoming my side career. But I was able to develop that to the point where I was getting flexibility. I could ask for flexibility. I could work on the road.
I was just going to say you can phone it in.
Exactly. Right, yeah, pretty much. I mean,
well, you can type it in.
One of my favorite stories was that I was completely out of vacation time. But I was also invited to perform and teach at the Finland Improv Festival. Mm. And so I couldn't pass it up. I was like, wow, never been to Finland. So my schedule, literally, for that week, Monday through Friday, consisted of waking up early in the morning, enjoying Finland. And at that point, early in the morning was late at night in the U.S. Mm-hmm. So, or overnight in the U.S. So I would wake up, have some coffee, walk around. Then I would teach from about 10 until 3. I would teach my workshop, and then by that point it's 8 a.m. back in the U.S.
Right.
So I would log on.
Yeah, you would go to work.
And I would go to work.
Right.
And so I would get out of one job of teaching, I would go right into the next of working, and then at night when there were shows, I would literally be working. I would be at the theater working on my computer.
Oh, God.
And then being like, okay, I'm taking a lunch break. And my lunch break would be go perform.
Right.
I'd go perform, then I'd get off stage, and I'd be back at work. And thankfully I had a tech job that would allow me to do that. But it was also a sign of the fact that I think I had reached a point where something had to give.
Yeah, you had to make a choice.
Yes.
And
this was the choice. And I knew something was about to happen, because in the summer of 2014, 3 artistic director jobs opened up. And
you mean around the country?
Around North America, actually. One was in Canada. Four. One in Canada, one in Pittsburgh, one in New York, and one in Sarasota. And all 4 of them were really interesting in it, and all 4 of them were what I felt another step in my career past where I'd reached before with Improv Boston. It was going to give me the type of responsibility I wanted and the type of community that I wanted. I wanted the opportunity to, again, build something new with the community,
mm-hmm.
which is what I did in Boston. And Sarasota was secretly the one that I wanted. That's of the 4, that's the one I really wanted, and I put the most effort into that application process. And it's also the one I was most familiar with.
Florida?
Just because I had been coming down for the festivals. I'd been coming down for the Sarasota Improv Festivals.
Oh.
So I was familiar with FST, I was familiar with Rebecca.
And they knew you.
And they knew me.
Right.
And so of the 4, that's the one that I was really hoping for and praying for. And all 4 were moving along, and this was the first one that confirmed, and so...
Well, my God.
Yeah, I think Rebecca, I believe, called me, and out of just the formality of it, I told her, well, just give me a day to think about it. But I knew what I was going to say. I confirmed the next day, and now I'm here. And now, after 17 years of doing both, finally able to...
To do what you do.
I do, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. It's so interesting. It's such a circuitous and almost haphazard.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if not for that one audition where they say you don't have to prepare,
right.
You don't have this life.
Right, right.
That's amazing.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, I'm thankful that I saw that fly. I mean, there was it could have been... I remember it being the last day of audition, so if I didn't see it that night, I would have missed it entirely.
And missed your life.
Yeah.
Amazing.
So
talk about what you're doing here, mm-hmm. because I'm going to run this and talk about what's coming up and what people can come to see and all that stuff.
Sure. So currently we're only doing a Saturday night show. This is our Out of Bounds show. And it's running for a couple of more weeks before we transition to another Saturday night show. And my goal right now is to take the talent that we have and really understand the talent better, then build their skill set so that we could develop our programming. so that we could have a larger variety of shows. So I'm already planning out the summer, which will include not only a Saturday game show type of production, but we're going to have an improvised musical. We're going to have an improvised a show that is meant to look like a movie, like not on screen, but we make it using sound special effects and stuff. We make it look like a movie, and then a third one that's an improvised sitcom. Right, and so three different types of shows that are all new for the FST improv programming.
So you're doing the long form now.
We are doing long form now, right?
Yeah, actually, explain so that people know what the difference between the short form and the long form are.
Sure. The simplest way to explain it is that in short form, which is what most people are familiar with, you're getting a suggestion for a scene that's going to go for about somewhere between 2 and 5 minutes. And that scene is usually going to have a set of restrictions or obstacles that the actors have to work through. In long form, you're getting one suggestion that'll then inspire somewhere between, let's say, 15 and 60 minutes of improvisation.
It's a story.
And it might be, sometimes it'll be a story, or sometimes it'll just be a collection of loosely tied together scenes.
But they are tied together.
Right. So, like, it might be tied together thematically. So they might never tie together narratively, but they might all fall under one theme.
Right.
And so you'll see a variety of both of those varieties. And in our classes, which is the other thing that I'm revamping, we hit on both of those varieties. I make sure that in our new curriculum, you're not only learning good short form, so learning how to play games well, but you're also learning the multiple flavors of long form, so that you could do a nice little montage of scenes, right? Or you could play out a narrative.
Okay, so currently, mm-hmm. Saturday night, in this space?
In the Bounds Lab.
In the what?
Bounds.
B-O-W-N-E.
Apostrophe S.
In the Bounds Lounge.
Lab.
Lab.
Yep.
Where I had never been before. That's amazing. So I'm going to have to come out and see
it. Sure, yeah.
Right. And then the summer, you're mm-hmm. going to do...
We'll do on Friday. So on Saturday nights, we'll continue to do the short form. And on two Friday nights per month, usually the last two Fridays of each month, we will be doing long form shows.
Okay.
The improvised musical, the improvised movie, and the improvised sitcom.
Wow, very exciting.
Yes. Yeah.
Very ambitious,
actually.
Thank you. Yeah. It is, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I ask one other question. Mm-hmm. And that is, usually when I talk to people who are this accomplished and this deep in their career, they've been doing it all their life. So mm-hmm. I say, the question is, you know, since you've been doing this all your life, what would you say about it? But given the way it happened to you, what would you say about what it's like to immerse yourself in the art of improv?
I've had an opportunity to be exposed to or experiment with a variety of different arts now that I've been doing this for close to 20 years. But improv is for me not only a way of performing, it is a way of creating, right? It's a way, in my opinion, improv, it could be applied to any art form, and all we're doing is we're shrinking the creative cycle from days, weeks, months. We're shrinking that creative cycle down to a moment and down to an instant, right? You don't have the time to revamp and review. You have to make decisions right away and create on the spot, right? So when we're doing an improvised musical with a two-person, you know, we have a piano player and a drummer and five, six singers, and we're creating original music on the spot, stuff that would take weeks to do. We have to do in about a half second. So that for me is that the idea of philosophically what improv is starts to not only affect the art form, but also as a lifestyle. You start to adopt it as a lifestyle, because it's what improv starts to do to you is it starts to make you feel more confident about the decisions you're making right now, right? And it also helps you appreciate the moment, because that's what improv is all about. You have to stay in that moment, right? The moment you get anchored down by anything in the past, you're out of the present. And on stage, you can't do that. You have to stay in the moment. And in many ways, I think improv changed my life in that way. It's had a very positive experience. I used to be very introverted. I remember before improv, describing to my mother, I used to be like, I feel like I'm walking around in a haze, or like I'm half asleep or something. And I felt like it's because my thoughts were just constantly
bombarding you.
Yeah, and improv just introduced some clarity to what was happening, and just allowed me to appreciate the moments. And I think because of that, just like the day that I saw the flyer,
mm-hmm.
you know, you're open to these moments, and you have to just make a decision right then and there. You don't have time to contemplate, or think, or second guess.
Or worry.
Make a decision. Or worry. You make a decision.
Yeah, it's the essence of creativity, isn't
mm-hmm.
it?
Mm-hmm.
And spontaneity.
Right.
And the old be here now.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly.
It's lovely.
Mm-hmm.
It's lovely. And so, so for you, it has informed your life, hasn't it?
Yes.
I mean, it's made you the person you are. That's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
That's wonderful.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, so if people want to come, who should they call? Where should they go? Any of that? Do you know?
Sure. I mean, they could. People could contact me directly. At WLUERA@FloridaStudioTheater.org. Or they could just go right to our website, and all of our improv shows are there. And we have a big festival this summer that's coming up.
When?
It's going to be July 9th through the 11th. And we have acts coming in from all over the country, and actually from all over the world. We have an act coming in from Argentina and from Spain. We have
wow.
two acts.
Wow.
So it'll be a lot of fun to have them here.
That's lovely. That is great. Thank you so much, Will.
Thank you. Thank you.
This
thank you very much,
great.
Lynn. Thank you.
So when you listen to Will Uera, what you hear is a man who knew, whether he was aware of it or not, every time something jumped out of the landscape at him and said, this has meaning for me. In the third grade, when they're presenting the flag. Later, when he's learning dances, although he has no interest in being a performer, he knows this is something he wants to do. He understands that he's drawn to the stage. He understands that scripting is scary to him. And when he sees that ad, he understands immediately that this is something that would work for him, that would be interesting to him. And all along, his interest in science, very powerful, very compelling. This is a man who, whatever he says about having been walking around in a fog, was always aware that when he saw it and it was his, he knew it. And of course, it has landed him this ability to focus on who he is and what he needs in the job which fits him like a glove. I was lucky enough to see the last performance of the musical, the Saturday night musicals that they were doing, and the work is splendid, and I hope that you heard that the festival is coming and that you will sign up and go down, get a chance to see Will. I'm sure he will MC. Okay, so now that brings us to Hunter Brown. In many ways, the polar opposite of Will Uera. For one thing, Hunter has just graduated from high school. So we have people at different ends of the age continuum. For another, Hunter tells a story of beginning to keep time with his feet when he was 3 or 4. And from then on, knowing that first the drums, and then the piano, but always music was his. Here, I'll let Hunter tell it. Okay, I'm here with Hunter Brown.
Hello.
And he is accompanist to the Florida Studio Theater Improv Troupe.
Yeah.
Good. You do it incredibly well.
Thank you.
yeah, no, it's great. Okay, so I interview people who make their living or their life with an art.
Okay.
And it's clear that the art to which you are at least making some of your living and probably have dedicated your life,
yeah.
is the art of music. Are we saying primarily piano?
My main instrument has usually been drums, but now it's piano.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
So I only ask one question, and that is, do you remember the very first moment that music, drums, singing, humming, attracted you, called you, was interesting?
One moment that I don't necessarily remember, but my mom has told me, was that there was this one time when we were at a wedding, and
how old were you?
I think she said I was 5, maybe 4. Mm-hmm. And there was like a big dance floor and everyone was dancing. And I was, you know, right in the middle of the dancing because I was always kind of like a ham when I was younger. but the way that I was dancing was I was kind of like tapping my feet back and forth. Mm-hmm. Almost playing the drums with my feet. And that was one of the first moments with my mom that it kind of clicked that I had somewhat of a musical mind. And my older sister played piano at the time, and my mom is a musical theater actress, so like I've always been surrounded with music. But that was kind of the first moment where she realized that it's something that was kind of like embedded like inside of me.
Yeah, you were keeping time.
Yeah, exactly. And then after that, ever since I can remember, I always wanted to play drums. See, my mom told me that in order to play drums, I had to learn piano first. You know, my mom was around musical directors and musical people all the time, and they would always say that it's really good to learn the piano first because it's almost always needed in...
Yeah, it can almost always work.
Exactly. And also, it's kind of the foundation of all musical theory and all other instruments, you know, at the center is kind of the piano. So I learned that first.
Did you like it?
Yeah, I did, yeah. I never really felt like, oh, you know, my mom is making me play the piano. I never really felt like that. There was definitely a part of me like that. This was like, you know, oh, this is the boring part. But let me
Later
get to the drums.
Be the drums. Right. Yeah, right.
But
right.
Eventually, I ended up, you know, really loving it.
Do you remember any of the early influences that made you interested in the drums? Where you saw the drums or heard the drums or any of that?
A few months before I started drum lessons, my mom was in a musical. Tom Suda was the drummer for it, and I just remember watching him like a hawk, because the pit was on stage, mm-hmm. and I just remember, you know, watching him and, you know, just being astounded by, like, the drums and the whole drum set and the whole thing, and it was a little bit after that he actually started giving me drum lessons.
Okay, so how old were you then?
I was 9 when I started drum lessons. No, the whole time I was... the whole time I was taking drum lessons, I was also taking piano lessons at the same time.
So, were you thinking, I'm going to be a musician?
I think at that time, I didn't really know what I was going to be. It was more just something that I enjoyed doing. I wasn't necessarily thinking, you know, I'm going to be a rock star, I'm going to be, you know, a musical director or anything like that. I think I more just really, really enjoyed playing instruments, and I didn't really think much about how it was going to affect my future.
Well, okay, so here we have this young man who's sort of coasting.
Yeah.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
And doing the stuff he likes, which happens to be playing drums and piano, mm-hmm. right? And are you playing with bands?
I've been homeschooled since I was in 3rd grade. But then when I started 6th grade, I did dual enrollment, where you can do some school at home and then some school in a public school or a private school or sometimes even a college, what have you. So then I started dual enrolling at Lee Middle School, which has a fantastic band, musical instrument program overall. Tom Suda had kind of pushed me along to find different ways to better me as a musician. And, you know, at that point, the next step was for me to start playing with other musicians.
Yeah, right.
Exactly. So then I enrolled in their jazz band and in their, like, orchestral band. I was only doing music classes there. I would do all my other school at home.
I see. Well, how was that for you? I mean, didn't you make relationships with the kids in the bands?
Definitely, yeah. Yeah, I gained friends, and it was interesting, like...
Because then you go home. They go to class,
yeah,
and you go home.
Yeah, it was always an interesting and kind of weird relationship to just be in, like, the music room for most of the day and then not
right.
see anyone else. Sometimes it could be alienating, but sometimes, honestly, I kind of liked it. For about 2 years, I was playing every day, playing with other people and playing things that I wanted to play and, you know, challenging me and things like that.
Yeah.
So that was definitely very, very important.
And teaching you.
Yeah.
I'm assuming that
yeah.
the teacher also had stuff to say.
Yeah,
right?
Definitely.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, so this is middle school.
Yeah,
so then
about
what
11
happened,
to 13.
Right, so what happened in high school?
I've been homeschooled, though, like all
the whole time.
High school. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Around when I was in high school, actually, Tom told me that I should just try dual enrolling at a college. So then I started dual enrolling at the SCF music program with their jazz band.
Okay, so you're homeschooled through high school.
Mm-hmm.
You're playing your music in college.
Yes.
So now the people that you're interacting with are basically older than you.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So were there a lot of kids your age playing in that?
No, at that time, I'm pretty sure I was actually the only one dual enrolled in the whole program.
So everybody else is a college student.
Yeah.
What was that like?
First year, it was kind of weird and similar to when I was in middle school.
Yeah.
I kind of felt like alienated and...
Well, you don't quite belong. You aren't what they are.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it was very different. And they would always call me little drummer boy. You know, a lot of times, like, they would belittle me and they wouldn't let me play the songs that I would want to play and things like that. And so, you know, it had its rough patches, but overall, you know, it was a good experience, so... I mean, you know, overall it was a very encouraging environment, but every once in a while, you know, some of the drummers can step on each other's toes and things like that.
Yeah. Wow. You have had a very atypical schooling experience, haven't you?
Yeah, it's definitely been very different, yeah.
All right, so you're closing in on the end of high school.
Mm-hmm.
What are you thinking?
I guess my junior year was around the point when I started, like, making money. Playing music, you know, I can play music for a few hours and actually get paid for it. That's
okay.
Nice.
What kind of stuff were you doing?
At the time, I was actually playing a lot of music on guitar. in the midst of all this, I picked up how to play the guitar. I wasn't very good at it. I'm still not very good at it, but enough to carry a tune. And a lot of times, I would play at like art galleries or cafes.
So, all right, so the light bulb goes off and you think, oh my God, I can actually get paid for doing this.
Yeah.
And so, are you going to go to college?
I actually just graduated high school in June. Yay. I got accepted into the Berklee Online School of Music.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Why?
Well, because what I want to major in isn't music performance, but it's music business. Not because I don't want to be a performer, of course, but what I'm really interested in doing is called music supervision, which is like picking out songs or sounds or anything to go into like TV or
I know
movies.
It's an interesting leap.
Yeah.
To choose the music as opposed to playing it.
Yeah, I think it started where I love playing music, but I also love listening to music. Like, I just went on a little vacation, and almost every day I went to some record store and bought a record. I love collecting and buying records and CDs and things like that. So it kind of started of, you know, how, you know, I love performing music, and that can be a career, but I also love listening to music and, you know, making other people, like, mix CDs and things like that. So how can I make that into a career? So I think it started, I don't remember what movie it was, but there was a movie that I saw that had a really good soundtrack, and I was like, wow, how do you do that? Because I want to do that. And then I found this whole thing called music supervision, and I was like, wow, this sounds like so much fun. Like, I want to do that.
So how did you get this gig?
That's actually a funny story. So I do musical theater, like I perform, I sing and dance and all that stuff. I ended up auditioning for a Florida Studio Theater show called Hairspray. At the callback, the artistic director, Richard Hopkins, was sitting in the room, and on my resume, I just put that I play piano.
Right.
And he was like, can we hear something? So I played, like, about like a minute and a half of a song, and he was like, okay, that's good. And then about 2.5 weeks later, I got two emails, one of them asking me to be the rehearsal pianist for Hairspray, and then another one asking me to be the accompanist for improv. And that was actually before they hired Will Luera. That was when it was just the group that Rebecca Hopkins created. Mm-hmm. And I was really nervous because I, you know, the only improv that I'd ever seen was Whose Line Is It Anyway? So I was like, you know, I have no idea what I'm doing. So I just kind of walked in there and they were like, you know, just play whatever you want. Like, we promise, like, no pressure at all. And then after the first rehearsal, I was kind of like, oh, I guess, you know, I can kind of do this. Cause I felt like I had, like, this certain knack and talent that I didn't even know that I had, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And now I was, like, finally able to utilize it, so...
And
really
that
good.
Talent is?
I guess just being able to...
Play on call.
Yeah, exactly. Like, before then, you know, I'd always be the person at, you know, parties that had a piano in the room, like, hey, play, you know, like, that Disney song,
right,
show tune, and we'll all sing along. And I was like, oh, yeah, I can play that. And I'd always like it, but... You know, I'd always be like, you know, I can never really make any money out of this, but it's just something that I'm able to do. But I feel like being able to play on call like that and just make stuff up, it was finally, I was like, oh, wow, there's actually something that I can do with this, and it's also really, really awesome. So that was awesome.
So has it not occurred to you to compose?
It didn't really occur to me until more recently.
When you're creating the overture, what do you think you're doing?
I mean, I guess, yeah, I am composing.
You definitely are composing.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. And I think that's the funny thing is I always thought of myself as, you know, like a person that would perform new music. I never really thought of myself as someone that would write it. But definitely, once I started doing this improv, specifically with the musicals, where I get to make up these songs, you know, a lot of times we'll finish playing a song and I'm like, man, I really liked that. Yeah. I wish I could have recorded it and, you know, used it. And that's, it definitely helped open my eyes, like, maybe I'll end up doing something like this in the future. What I'm trying to follow with is that, you know, this is what I'm doing right now. There are plenty of other things that I, you know, that I want on my agenda, but right now this is kind of, like, what my focus is on.
Mm-hmm. And that is getting through school
mm-hmm.
and playing as often as possible to make money.
Yeah.
And that's a lot,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, it's definitely a lot to focus on. That's why I'm kind of putting all my focus on it at this moment.
Yeah, okay, good. All right, so, you know, the only time I've ever seen the improv troupe was last night,
mm-hmm.
and that was a musical.
Mm-hmm.
So when they do other things, you play as well, but
yeah.
you don't do that?
Yeah,
what
yeah.
do you do?
It's, yeah, it's a little bit different, and there's, like, a little bit less pressure on me as well, which is kind of nice. But usually I'm just there, I'm their accompanist. Will's philosophy is, you know, no matter what the game or, you know, the show, no matter what kind of laughs you're getting, everything is always a scene, you know, with emotions and characters. And my job is to try to support any sort of scene with what I can.
To reflect the emotion that's on stage?
Exactly,
like
exactly,
that?
Yeah. And sometimes it's even to push the emotions in a certain direction if I feel like it should.
Right.
So, like, there have been times before, well, you know, there will be a funny scene, and then in order to make it funnier, I could add sad music, and then they start acting sad, or I could add, you know, like, hokey music, then they'll start acting in that certain way.
Oh, so you guys are responding to it.
Exactly, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I noticed that last night. I couldn't quite decide whether they were cueing you for the kind of music they wanted, or you were cueing them for the kind of music
mm-hmm.
they should be singing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? I mean, it seemed to me that some of that was going on, but it wasn't clear to me.
It's a road that goes both ways, honestly. Sometimes there's, you know, points where I feel, oh yeah, this
is calling for a ballad.
Exactly, but then there's sometimes where, you know, they'll say something like, I've always loved you, and it's like so clearly the title
right.
of a song.
Right, 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 right.
I'm like, oh, okay, I guess I should start playing.
Right, right, right.
So I think that's what I love about it, is it's not really me pushing them or them pushing me. It's very much like both
it's
of us.
It's a collaboration.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right, right.
Very
it
much
was only one time where I had the sense that they were done with the song,
uh-huh.
but you were not.
Right, right, right. Yeah, that can happen sometimes too.
You know, I think it's hard to tell. And I do think it's a very subtle communication
mm-hmm.
that you have to have with each other.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's a very subtle communication, and sometimes, you know, it doesn't always get through.
No, of course, it's an improvisation.
Yeah,
that's,
yeah,
you
exactly.
know, I mean, it's not a script.
Yeah, that's
right?
like the difficult thing, but at the same time, it's kind of like, you know, what we love about it.
Yeah,
is
of
the
course,
risk.
Of course. Of
yeah.
course. Oh, so you love the risk, do you?
Yes, definitely. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like a love-hate relationship almost, where, you know, every night you're just a little bit nervous that you're going to mess up, or it's not going to be as good as that one show that was really good, but then, you know, at the end of it, you're always just like, oh man, this is fun, I love this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
It's great. Okay, so, you're very young, but I asked this question about the life that you've lived. You really have given so much of your life, all of your life, really, to the pursuit of music and performing.
Yeah.
What would you say about what that's like?
I guess I would say it's as a performer, you know, like you love what you do, and, you know, you love the life that you chose, but sometimes it's just really hard, and sometimes, you know, you just want to stay in bed and, you know, do something normal for once, and, you know, you want someone to say yes instead of no, and, you know, sometimes it kind of, you know, it hurts, and you feel almost like it's ruining your life, but then I think also there are those moments where you're kind of reminded, oh yeah, like this is why I'm doing what I'm doing, you know, this is why I love this and this is why I chose this career. And I think, you know, there's always that constant struggle of, am I affecting people's lives? Am I doing what I wanted to be doing? Am I doing what I'm supposed to be doing?
Mm-hmm.
There are definitely some points where, you know, I have doubts and I'm like, oh, you know, maybe I should do something else that's, you know, makes a little bit more sense financially or what have you. But then there are always those points where I'm like, oh yeah, this is why I do what I do, and I like that.
And that's a perfect place to stop. Thank you so much, Hunter Brown.
Thank you very much.
So Hunter makes the point that when you are being who you really are, when you are doing what it seems to you you were meant to do, when you are doing the thing that when you're doing it, you think, oh yes, this is mine, then you are being who you really are. It doesn't mean that there's no downside to that. It doesn't mean that you never second guess it. It doesn't mean that there aren't consequences to being who you really are that you would rather not have. It just means that you know it when you're doing it. And as always, it is my hope that when you listen to people like Will Uwera and Hunter Brown, you are saying to yourself, is this true for me? Am I doing what I was meant to do? Am I being who I was meant to be? And if not, do you want to? If you hear this and you think, well, there was really something I wanted to be or do, but I didn't feel able, I felt too afraid, I thought people would judge me, I thought I wouldn't be good enough, I thought people would be jealous or angry, or there's a quality I have always admired but never could access. Maybe you were forced to deny something really important about yourself. And I believe, as a therapist, of course, that it is not too late. So if listening to Will, listening to Hunter, you had the suspicion that there was something that maybe you could be, could do, could have, perhaps it's time to explore that possibility. And again, if you want, you can find me at my website, thelinshow.com. And as always, I hope that you got something from this show that you can use. Something that inspired you, something that tickled you, something that made you interested in improv or piano or singing or just standing up for yourself. But something that'll bring you back, because as always, I will be back next week, same time, same station. And as always, I sure hope you will be too.
You see, I'm getting older. My hair is turning gray. Oh, you see my face and figure. I've both seen better days. Well, I won't be retiring. I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing. Not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. You see that I have had my shot. My time has come and gone. Please get off the stage, let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a bell I keep on ringing, not a chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly. Well, I don't give a dang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Rising from the ashes, every chance I get. I may be running out of time, but it ain't over yet. 'Cause me and Sister Phoenix, we won't give up the flight. No, no, we will not go gentle sang. I may not be as juicy, hell, but I still got some tang. So you won't hear me simper. I may have gotten